Hello, friend. I'm so glad you're here. My name is Zach Holt, and this has Come to the Table. Some of our most intimate conversations happen at the kitchen table. Walls crumble as space is created to know one another more deeply. Our hurt and our heartache are replaced by hope and healing when we pull up a chair, let down our guard, and simply be who we are, where we are. In our time together, we will step into the shoes of others through recovery stories of redemption, offer connections and support for those in need, and come together as a community starving for revival in our region. So if you're hungry, you came to the right place. Well, friends, we are blessed to have you here on another episode of Come to the Table, and great to have a good friend and a participant in our 117 program. Craig is here in the studio with us today. Just such a servant's heart, and we love him to death. So I'm excited to introduce Craig. So say hi, Craig.
Hello. How are you doing, Jay?
So why don't you jump in? Tell us a little bit about where you grew up, what that was like, stuff you struggled with. So kind of just set that up for us.
Well, it began when I was born, but far back as I can remember, it's my father and my mom. They always held a tight grip on us as kids. And my dad, he owned his own shoe repair shop. My mother, she owned her own restaurant. And I would go after school, I would go either to my dad's shoe shop or to my mom's restaurant. So I got a hand in on fixing shoes and cooking.
Yeah.
And I guess when I got about 10 years old, my dad bought me a dog. Or Collie. Mm-hmm. Looked just like Lassie.
Really?
And I loved that dog. And the dog was very protective for me.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived back on the water. We had mm-hmm. a big house on the water.
Mm-hmm.
Chesapeake Bay used to go through my backyard. My mom and them, they used to tell me stay away from that water. But, you know, I'm curious as a kid. I used to go out there and try to fish and stuff mm-hmm. by myself. And one time I went down, which I didn't know was a boat ramp then. I just knew it was a piece of concrete. And the water had put that slime up there, so it was slippery. And I tried to go down there to get a crab and string or something, and slipped, and my feet went in the water. And that dog grabbed me and pulled me back up. That was the first time he saved me. Second time, we had some frost on the ground. I'm on my way to school, and I went to step out the front porch, and the dog started biting at the ground. And I thought he was trying to bite my feet. Ran the house and told my dad. My dad came out with his pistol. He thought the dog had, you know, lost his mind. Mm-hmm. Then he looked at the ground and it was a snake there. And the dog had killed the snake for me. So I loved that dog. And my dad, he always taught us, you know, ain't no such thing as you can't.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't no such thing as you can't, no matter what size you mm-hmm. are. He was a professional boxer before.
Really?
Before he opened his own shoe shop. Yeah, you probably heard of Moore versus Moore.
Huh.
Yeah. Okay, well, my dad was a professional fighter. And he trained boxers for the police department, mm-hmm. Portsmouth Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
And so him and my mom eventually split up. I guess I was like 12 or 13 years old. And I went from living in that big house on the water to straight to the ghetto.
Mm.
First day of school, I got in a fight. I boxed before, but I had never been in a fight before. And I got in a fight, and that really kind of messed me up because I was so easygoing, used mm-hmm. to everybody laughing. So it kind of gave me a, you know, beware feeling,
yeah.
always watching and, you know, nervous about everyone that I was around.
Yeah.
So I stayed myself a lot, either with my cousin Ricky.
Mm-hmm.
Because Ricky, he grew up in Academy Park. That's where we went, where mm-hmm. we ended up moving to. So I would hang out with Rick. And my mom and them, you say, don't you hang out with Ricky. Even his mom and dad would tell me, do not hang out with Ricky. But we would meet around the corner and go hang out. Yeah, in our teens, we started sipping on beer and stuff. And it led to weed, marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was with a guy one day, my brother-in-law, God bless him, he passed away. I was about 18 going on 19. My son was about 6 months old. And he went and bought some crack.
Mm.
And I told him, let me try it. And he kept saying, no. And he got up to do something, turned his back. I grabbed a piece of it and put it up in. Mm-hmm. I didn't even feel it. Mm-hmm. Then I tried to hit it again. And that's when I felt it. Mm-hmm. I said, I like this. This mm-hmm. get me high faster than marijuana. Mm-hmm. I just didn't know what I was headed for. What make it so bad, I liked it. So I had money in the bank, 19 years old. Got my first apartment, had a car, had my son's mother. By the time I was 22, I started declining, I started losing, lost my car, didn't have money, we still had the apartment. Always took care of my son and paid bills, but everything I had, I'd give it away. Might as well say I mm-hmm. gave it away because mm-hmm. I was using. Mm-hmm. And, my son's mother, she's a good woman. She stuck with me till I was like 32 years old, from the age of 16.
Wow.
All the way through that. And I didn't give up because I still, like I said, I took care of home, but I wasn't doing nothing for myself. And I think that hurt her more because she saw me declining. And so my addiction, we separated. She figured if I would go back, you know, to see my mom and my sister, they wouldn't allow that stuff in their house. And so I went back to stay with them. So I still, since I was there and know what I would call my wife, I would send money to my son and then I would just run the streets. Hmm. She thinking I'm at home with my mom and my sister, I'm out hanging out in the streets,
yeah.
being in places I shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
God was watching over me the whole time because I've seen a lot of people get shot, or I've just been left a place and the police would kick in there,
mm-hmm.
or I would leave with certain people and one of them would get shot or overdose. And I would think to myself, it's bad to think like that, but all this stuff is missing me.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew. And then it just got worse and worse. So I ended up going to prison. Well, I went to jail a couple of times for trespassing. Then I got caught with some drugs and got put on probation. Violated that and went to prison for 5 years. While I was in prison, I lost my brother, my sister, and my mom.
Oh, wow.
So when I came back home trying to be the uncle to my nieces and my son and all of them. They were just barely grown. This was 2016. And they were grown, but I still saw them like those little kids that I left 5 years ago. They were like 18, 19, but when I left, they were 13, 14 mm-hmm. years old. And everybody's running whoosh, whoosh, and I'm cleaning up the house. And, you know, Mom wouldn't want this like this. It mm-hmm. seemed like my mom and my sister and them were still there. So I'm cooking Sunday dinner, mm-hmm. all this food, and nobody's showing up because the kids just running rapid.
Yeah.
Then they got the insurance money from my mom. My sister, mm-hmm. they out buying cars and just running, and I'm the same guy that left 5 years ago trying to do the same things. And it was like, won't nobody listening to me. So I went back to doing drugs real bad and ended up staying with a friend of mine. Well, life, I've been knowing Earl, he's like family now. Been knowing him since like 10 years, mm-hmm. 10 years old. When I first came to Portsmouth, 12 years old. And me and Earl had his own place and his wife had passed away. So we would go out, we always worked though to get our drug of choice. Worked or hustle, sell it or yeah. whatever. But we would go out and wash cars or do yards and go get our drug of choice, go back to his house, do it. And it became the same routine over and over. And I was so tired, but I knew I couldn't lay in that bed. Or I would get sick, because by mm-hmm. now I had tried heroin,
mm-hmm.
and it caught me straight off the bat. Mm-hmm. And everybody, even the guys that I did drugs with, you still me, Craig, do not do the heroin.
Mm-hmm.
But I was hard-headed. And that stuff, man, it really messed me up. I would be sick, and I'm so used to jumping up and going and doing this and doing that. Woke up one morning, I was so sick I couldn't move. And So I was staying with Earl, and person started out good because we were best friends, but you don't really get known about it until you live with them.
That's right.
And one day I would cook dinner for us and stuff, and we would eat. And one day I took my plate, and I think we just barely had enough drugs to where we wasn't sick. And I took my plate of food and went to go in the room. And he busted in the room and was like, "You can't eat in this room, blah, blah, blah," and cut the light out. Like, "I'm eating." And he cut the light out. "What are you eating, the doc? You don't need a light to eat." I said, "Yeah, it's time to go. Time to get out of here because I'm a grown man, and I shouldn't have to take this off of another man. I didn't want it to come to, you know, bodily harm to each other." So I went and signed up for this program in Portsmouth. And they let us stay in a motel room for 2 weeks, and then they supposed to have sent us to a program. Well, I stayed there 2 weeks, and they never sent me to a program. I think they were just getting that money, because there would be a line of people out there, and there was this man out there, and he would either give you the money for a motel room or give you a motel room. I said, "Why is he out here giving these people money that are addicts?" Which one guy would get the motel room and the other guy would get the money, and both of them would sit in the motel room and do drugs.
Yeah.
But it was a crazy situation. So I went looking for Ricky, my cousin, as always, chasing behind Rick, running behind Rick. And his sister told me that he was gone. He had went into a program like a week before then. And I had been thinking about, you know, I'm trying to get into programs. So I called Gay Lights to talk to Ricky. And they said that they couldn't contact with me, but they would give him a note or something saying I had called. So while I was on the phone, I was asking the lady how I could get in that program. She took my name and stuff, and like 2 days later, she called me and asked me was I ready to come. And I was like, I was shocked because I didn't think she was really going to call. So I told her let me get through that weekend and come on that Monday. My luck, it snowed, and the roads and stuff was closed. So I didn't know if I was happy because I wanted to do more drugs or if I was sad because, you know, I was ready to go. Anyway, when I get to Gay Lights, Ricky had left 2 days before then, and I asked him, I said, did he go home? And they said, no, he went to Bristol Lifestyle Recovery. I've been following Ricky all my life, so I might as well try that. And then they told me it was in Tennessee. I said, Gay Lights, far enough away from Portsmouth. I had planned on going back home till I got to get to BLI. And I stayed there the first 2 weeks in the building. People were real nice. And when I got out, I went walking and looking for a job, just enough money so I could have some money to go back home when my time was up. But when I went around looking for a job, the people were so nice. See, I like it up here. This is like my Florida. And I hadn't heard a gunshot yet, which was weird. But so I ended up getting a job. 6 months went by, and I found an apartment on the Tennessee side. I moved an apartment. I was there like 3-4 months, and my probation caught up with me. And they said that I got violated for getting an apartment on across the state line. So they came and got me and took me back to Portsmouth. I went in the courtroom and the judge, and God bless me, the judge took me off probation and told me I can go anywhere I wanted to because I had battled my life. You know, by the time I got back, something had happened in my apartment. I ended up losing it. Don't want to get into that one. But someone else was in my apartment, and they did some things that got me evicted. So when I had nowhere to go, I got halfway back here. I'm on the bus, and someone called me, a friend of mine called me and said, your landlord called and said, you have an immediate eviction. Something happened in your apartment. And I'm like, I'm not even there. What, you know, how can I get evicted? I'm not there.
Right.
Well, anyway, they say that they were in there, and I had like 24 hours to get my stuff. I didn't have a car to get. I really knew anybody with a car. So I went there, I grabbed all the clothes I could, and I ended up checking into the Gray House. I had to pay money to go stay there.
Mm-hmm.
And I started calling BLR again, telling them I needed to come back, which I really wasn't. I had dabbled a little bit, drunk a beer, and maybe a little bit of crack again, mm-hmm. but no heroin.
Yeah.
So I called BLR and told them I needed help again. And they welcomed me back in like I never left.
Mm-hmm.
And that time I said, well, 6 months ain't gonna be long enough. And besides mm-hmm. that, I seen the guys at 117,
mm-hmm.
and everybody seemed so happy, and they had a
mm-hmm.
shine about them.
Mm-hmm.
And I see, I probably like hanging out with them guys. And besides that, Ricky had went there, mm-hmm. and as I told you, I follow
wherever Ricky.
Ricky
goes, I go.
And you end up letting me come to 117, and it was a blessing, man. And even now, I'm looking for an apartment, but even if I don't want to leave because I done got, so it's like home now.
Yeah.
I always thought, you know, that room, that building, man, it's like a big home to me now.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys in there are just like a bunch of brothers.
Mm-hmm.
I got more than one Ricky to follow around. Sometimes they make me go to my room. I'd be so worse on that. Trying to make everybody eat ice cream and popcorn. But I have a good time there, and I could feel the difference in me. I was talking to Brother Uriah the other day. I said, you know what I just thought about? I haven't been mad in almost 8 months. I have not been upset. I'm happy. Only thing, I miss my family a little bit, but I called and talked to them. I done got me a car. I done saved some money. And I love going to church,
mm-hmm.
going to the table.
Yeah.
And it's like a different addiction now. Mm-hmm. I love it, man. Mm-hmm. And I feel a lot better about my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I just hope a lot of more guys do the same thing. Because it's sad when you see people out there that you care about still doing the same thing. The guy Earl I was staying with, I went home and I had to go because it's sad, man.
Still stuck
and
in
they
it?
Don't know. Yeah, he dealt with the same thing, doing the same thing he was mm-hmm. I was doing when I left there. And
mm-hmm.
it was just in denial, man.
Yeah.
And it's sad, and especially when somebody you care about.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't help nobody if I don't help myself.
That's right.
And that's where I'm at today.
That's good. That's good. So I didn't know that your dad was a fighter. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how would you compare recovery to a fight, to a boxing match? How would you
get knocked down, get back up?
Yeah.
And never say you can't.
Mm-hmm.
It's like me being in the ring with Mike Tyson. Mm-hmm. I got to get out. I got to walk out of that ring.
Mm-hmm.
So your addiction is Mike Tyson.
Mm-hmm.
You got to beat it.
Yeah.
You got to, because it's going to beat you. It's going to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, might bite you off.
Always, Ricky always says that it's got a winning record.
It does.
Addiction has a winning record.
It does.
You know?
And for us to beat it, man, we got to mm-hmm. be strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Got to be.
And it's a long fight, you know what I'm saying? It's 12 rounds.
It's
you're going at it for the long haul, you know? And in boxing, you know, you could have 11 good rounds, and
yeah,
on the 12th round, you take a shot, you know,
yeah.
and
you're out.
You know, so it's never guaranteed, you
exactly.
know, that you got it. There's no, you know, there's no arrival, you know, no moment where you're like, okay, I don't have to, you know, kind of like there's yeah. no point in time where I can realistically just say, okay, I like where my body's at.
Mm-hmm.
I'm never going to work out again, you know,
yeah.
and
right.
to expect that I'm going to stay in the same condition is just ridiculous. Nobody would believe it, you know, and yet there, you know, there are times folks we deal with in recovery that they get to a place and it's like they just ease off and just kind of coast.
Well, they know it, they're right back in the same
situation.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're coasting, it's because you're going downhill, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people,
like me, I love Portsmouth, but I know if I go back there mm-hmm. to stay,
mm-hmm.
I won't make it back this time.
Yeah.
Now I go there and visit my family, and we'll go places.
Mm-hmm.
I was with my son and them in June, my granddaughter's graduation,
mm-hmm.
Father's Day, and her birthday all hitting the same week.
Yeah.
So I went home, and we took the grandkids down to the beach, You know, that was the first time in 20-something, well, me and my wife met when I was 16. That was the first time me and her been to the beach, and we had been right there. I mean, a few miles from Virginia Beach the whole our whole life. Uh-huh. I had never been to the beach together.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that was fun. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of sad at the same time because we were right there, and I didn't take the time to do those things.
Yeah.
But now I do that with them. We go to the movies together. Mm-hmm. We went in the movies with the grandkids. It was about, and a couple of my nieces, the little ones, mm-hmm. it was like 10 of us. And I could actually pay for everybody to go to the movies. That was a big deal to them.
Yeah.
It's little things like that that they can tell is changing me. Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I see in you that I think is really amazing is you have such a servant's heart, you know. Why don't maybe share a little bit about like what it is about serving others that really, you know, kind of energizes you or satisfies, like what?
Well, I always like to make people feel like we are all equal.
Uh-huh.
So if I got it, you can get half of mine and we'll both have the same amount.
Mm-hmm.
I've been that way since I was a kid. I would get a bag of candy and I would give away all of it except one piece.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody could have some. And I got more out of it than just that piece of candy.
Mm-hmm.
It was a feeling, like you say, it was right.
Mm-hmm.
No, and that's what I like feeling there. I like feeling right.
Mm-hmm.
I was even like that in my addiction. Mm-hmm. I would give away more than I would use if anybody was there. But most of the time, I didn't be around a crowd of people doing my stuff.
Yeah.
I did it just me and one more, me and my cousin. But I don't even like talking about that too much.
Yeah.
That stuff is terrible, man.
It's awful, to be in that, you know, that space of, you know, isolation, you know, just by yourself with dope, and it's just so lonely. And it's just sad.
It
you
is.
Look back on it and
it's sad.
Yeah, I was talking to, I just left the jail before I came here, and we were talking about, you know, we've said it in 117, the table before, about, you know, it's not enough to get the people out of Egypt. You have to get Egypt out of the people, you know, and that sometimes after we've been set free, we still look back to that life of bondage and romanticize it. You know, the Israelites would look back to Egypt and they'd be like, remember whenever we had that pot of stew and we had all that water? And it's for us that have, you know, recovered, it's a lot easier for us to romanticize and remember, you know, the good times than it is. Like, we have to go a little deeper in our memory to remember the rock bottom, you know, to remember.
And it makes me sad. It makes my eyes water up every time I think about it.
But then it's like also, you know, there's a part of us, you know, that we need to kind of not give a whole lot of attention to it, but we need to never forget. You know, never forget that, you know, for me, it's, you know, wet socks, sleep behind Walmart, you know, so that's when there ever is a flutter of temptation, you know, hey, you could maybe do a little bit of, and I think wet socks at Walmart, you know, and it's like it pulls you back to that.
And mine, I think, is the loneliness.
Yeah.
And then to see that, you know, that it's not that person, it's that drug.
Yeah.
It's like y'all could be so happy in the beginning, but when it's gone, it's like they turn into a totally different person.
Oh,
I
gosh,
guess you do too,
but
you don't, wasn't seeing it.
Yeah.
But I'm more happier than I am. I'm on cloud nine now, man. I wouldn't give nothing in the world to go back to that life. And I wish, I just pray that other people get it, man, before it's too late.
Would you have thought, you know, if you know, 5, 6, 8 years ago, if somebody told you, you know, in 2024, you're going to, you know, move out near the mountains in corner Virginia,
I wouldn't have believed it a year ago, when I first came here.
You're going to be helping to lead outreach ministry and, like, you know, it's just, it's cool the way that.
That's something about religion. Used to confuse me because my father had a different religion than my mother. So I just figured if I went through life believing in God, that would be enough.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in God.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in God. But I'd have learned so much more, you know, and 117, I'd have learned how to read the Bible. Now, I didn't even know how to do that when I got there.
Yeah.
And my Bible don't creak no more when I open it now. It's got some little
cobwebs,
wire down it.
Cobwebs, a little dust right? cloud coming out. You got to blow it off.
Yeah, man, I got. And I remember when you said one day at your table, when you can tell when you're in your Bible, when you're opening the paper, start falling out.
Yeah.
I got a couple of pieces of paper in my Bible now.
It's like confetti.
And I done highlighted little certain things in it. It's beautiful, man. I can't get enough of it.
Yeah, it's a joy, you know, and to be able to give back to those that are, you know, where we once were, you know, and show them that no, there's a way out of this thing. You know, there is hope, you know, and sometimes it's, you know, we do a lot with, you know, hygiene products and some food stuff and tarps and tents. And it's like, you know, it's that little something, you know, that people know if, you know, if they need a tent, if they need a tarp, if they need this, they can, you know, they can come and they can ask us and we'll do our best, you know, to be there for them. And it's, you know, some people, you know, may say, oh, well, you know, what good is it? Doesn't that enable them or this and that? And it's like, you know, and there is a certain extent, you know, where there's a difference between a handout and a hand up, you know, but also, man, if you're, you know, if your brother's out there and he's hungry, you know, if you're, you know, if it's a, you know, a young woman, you know, just sleeping outside and she's asking for a tent, you know, it feels like, the thing Christ would call us to do is to feed the hungry, you know, and help a sister out with a tent, you know. And it's when those things are given in love that I think it makes a real profound impact on people's lives. You know, Miss Kathy, we love to death, and and she, you know, she kind of came in and stuck with us, you know, because we helped her out on a hotel room for a couple of weeks after she lost her leg, you know, and she loves us, man. You know, so it's a beautiful thing to be able to be there for people and to help people. So as we get close to wrapping up here, if you could speak directly into, the ear of someone who is still struggling in addiction, doesn't think that there's any hope, what would you say to them?
Come to the table. And stick with it. I mean, once you get someone to help you, don't give up too easily, because it's not easy. It's going to be hard. But stick in there and trust the process.
Yeah.
Because everything comes out all right if you just stick in there and believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't give up the first time. Mm. Do not give up. Just stick in there and trust the process.
Yeah.
I had a counselor tell me that one time, and I told him, I said, I'm going to do this, and it better work out. And it's been working ever since. Because I would get halfway and just get frustrated.
Yeah.
And this ain't going to work. This was like the third or fourth rehab I've been in.
Mm-hmm.
But this one time, the counselor, trust the process. And I got a book and wrote down what they said in the meetings, and I did what they said do. And God bless it, it works.
Yeah, it does. It does. It works if you work it.
Yes,
right?
It does.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome, man. Well, Craig, we love you. We appreciate you more than you know,
man.
And it's a joy to get to walk with you and see you, how much you've grown, how much you've come alive, and you're great. You're great. We thank the world of you.
Thank you.
So, friend, I want to thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Come to the Table. We hope that it has been either an encouragement to your recovery or created in you a curiosity about what it could look like to live into a radical new mindset of selfless service to others. If you'd like to connect with us and learn more about our ministry or receive some feedback, encouragement, how we can help you more faithfully walk beside others, we'd love to connect with you and pour into you. If you're interested in recovery resources or creating intentional spaces for spiritual growth, you can reach out to us at thetablebristol117@gmail.com. Friend, I want to tell you that you do not have to walk this road alone. That hope and redemption, beauty from ashes, light from dark, are all so much closer than you know. So grace and peace to you, my friend.